The book we're going to talk about today has got a long title, and it's a curious title. It's called The 100-Year-Old Man Who Climbed Out of the Window and Disappeared. And it's described as an international best-selling sensation because it's written by a Swedish author and then translated. Yes. Jonas Jonasson. Val, give us a clue. What is this this 100-year-old man? Where is he? Where does he start off?
Well, he starts off in an old folks' home. I find the whole book actually very liberating. It's a sort of a joyous romp. This old man is 100 years old, and they're going to make a big thing of his 100th birthday. They've got the mayor coming, they've got the press coming, all the staff are going to be there, and he just doesn't want it. So it's not really this celebration about him and his 100th birthday. It's really a sort of bit of advertisement for the home and so on. And he's supposed to be getting ready, and director Alice, who is a very angry sort of director who looks after the home, is nagging him to get ready and come out. And he climbs out of the window and goes for a little walk.
You might think he could have made up his mind earlier and been man enough to tell the others of his decision, but Allan Carlson had never been given to ponder things too long. So the idea had barely taken hold in the old man's head before he opened the window of his room on the ground floor of the old people's home in the town of Malmchöping and stepped out into the flower bed.
Now, it might seem unusual for a 100-year-old man to climb out of the window, and this is what I find is so liberating. He's living in a home where everything's ordered and the food is brought to him, and he has to get dressed when he's told to get dressed, and the food comes when it comes, and he has no say in it, but suddenly life opens up for him, and he climbs out of the window and goes for a walk. He's only got his slippers on, and he doesn't mind. And one thinks, how can this possibly happen? And as the story unfolds, one realises that his previous life has been a very, very unusual one. And so the book alternates between talking about his previous life and all the exciting adventures that he's had, unbelievable adventures, some people would say, I think most people would say, and really he's running away now because he's running away both from the home. Director Alice has set the police on him, and he's running away from a gang of evil people.
Now, he encounters those gangs more or less by accident. I mean, the evil people are not ones he's gone looking for, but almost everything about his life is an accident. And we can come perhaps to his past life a bit later, but he sets off, and he's got to get away from where he is. So, of course, he goes to the bus station,
yes.
And the bus station leads him into an encounter with a character. That character turns out to be one of the evil ones. And the main character, his name is Allan, isn't it? Allan Carlson. He seems to get away with all sorts of things. Everything works for him.
Yes, or not everything, because he has long spells in prisons, various prisons.
Oh, during his lifetime, yes.
Oh, during his lifetime, yes.
But the now, as he proceeds, he encounters all sorts of these very strange, very bizarre people. All of whom have got a history of their own.
Oh, yes, very interesting histories as well. In fact, at the bus station, where he's waiting for a bus to take him anywhere, he doesn't mind where, a young man is desperate for the toilet and has a huge, heavy suitcase, and he asks this innocent-looking old man to look after his suitcase while he goes to the loo. While he goes, the bus comes, so the old man thinks he'd better not leave the suitcase there, and the kindly bus conductor helps him onto the bus and puts the case in the boot of the bus. And whereupon Allan Carlson has got a fair bit of money in his pocket, but he decides to spend 50 crowns and says, how far will 50 crowns take me? And gets off at the stop, which is an old disused railway station in the middle of the country, together with this suitcase. So in a sense, he has stolen the new suitcase, although he had no intention of doing so originally. He thought he was helping the young man. I have to say, this book isn't everybody's cup of tea. When we first read it in our reading group, we all loved it. It's a humorous book. There's a lot of humour in it. And one of the group said, absolute rubbish. I was talking to her recently and I found out she'd only read the first 50 pages and she hadn't really followed it through. As this old man goes on and we get a glimpse of his past life, it's clear that he has had a very, very exciting life and has been present at most of the world events in the last century. On this occasion, he meets a very interesting man who's living in the station, And his background was that he had arranged, this is Jonas Jonasson, and he had arranged to put electricity into the centre, and he'd made a lot of money in the whole area. And he'd made a lot of money doing this, and unfortunately, when he ordered the telegraph poles to put all the electricity on, he had ordered them all a little bit too short. All the farmers in the area had bought new combine harvesters. So when electricity came to the area and they started using their combine harvesters, all the electricity lines were mowed down by the combine harvesters, and the electricity in the whole area was out for a week and nothing worked, and he'd had to run away and hide. So he was quite a character to begin with. And Alan and he open the case together and they find inside 50 million crowns. Well, that's quite a lot of money, and they decide that they would run away with it together. And they get as far as a chap who runs a hot dog stall. Now, this man is another interesting man. His name is Benny. And his background is that he and his brother inherited a lot of money, and the limitations on having the money were that they had to study. And so his brother enrolled them both in a short course, which apparently qualified, and they would only get paid while they were studying a monthly allowance, quite a good monthly allowance. But his brother was very bossy, and Benny, just to pay him out, he enrolled in a much longer course, a degree course. Just before the end, he dropped out. And apparently, under the terms of this will, you were allowed to do that as long as you took up further study. So in his lifetime, he had done many degrees, nearly degrees. So he was nearly a vet. He was nearly a doctor. He was nearly a chemical engineer. So that was his background. He had a car, and he and Jonas set off in the car with the money, and that's how their main journey started.
After a while, Julius started to rustle with something in the back seat. He held out an opened bag of sweets to Alan and Benny. "Just look what I found in my pocket," he said. Alan raised his eyebrows. "You stole a bag of sweets when we've got 50 million in the suitcase?" "You've got 50 million in the suitcase?" asked Benny. "Oops," said Alan. "Not quite," said Julius. "We gave you 100,000. "Plus 500 for the petrol," said Alan. Benny was silent for a few seconds. "So you've got 49,899,500 crowns in the suitcase?" "You have a head for numbers," said Alan.
And that's the adventure that goes on from the moment he steps out through the window and,
yes,
and disappears. He then gets in with these strange people, and they've all got these great back histories,
back
which
history,
are amusing,
yeah,
and the whole thing is very funny. Because he alternates, once he gets going, he then goes back into his past as well. He starts to, the author starts to tell us a lot about his past. And he was something of an explosives freak. He liked blowing things up. He'd got that from his father. And he ends up in the 1930s involved in the Spanish Civil War. So it's a long story to get there, but there he is in Spain in the Spanish Civil War, and he sets some explosives to blow up a bridge.
Yes.
And some characters are coming across that, a little swaggering man with military uniforms. And he stands up and shouts at them because he's worried they're going to be blown up by the...
Because he said his job was to blow up bridges, not to blow up people. So he shouted at them to get back, you know, you're going to...
Yes. And in fact, they run forward, thinking they'll capture him, and then the bridge blows up.
And when the smoke settled, there was no longer any question of killing Alan. The little man with the medals shook his hand and explained that a real general knows how to show his appreciation, and that the best thing now was for the group to withdraw to the other side again, with or without a bridge. If his saviour wanted to come along, he was more than welcome. Once there, the general would invite him to dinner. "Paella Andaluz," said the general. "My cook is from the south. Comprende?"
General Franco, as this man
is
turns out,
swaggering.
Is the little swaggering military man, who then becomes a firm friend of our hero, because, of course, he thinks the hero saved his life.
Yes.
And that is the sort of context within which we dip backwards all the time into different periods of history. And, of course, the Spanish Civil War is followed by the main World War and the rise of communism. So who else does he encounter? Remind me.
Well, when he leaves Spain, having, you know, risen to quite a high position with as Franco's assistant, he takes a boat to anywhere, and then that's sort of typical. He emphasises all the way through this that he's not political, and yet he becomes accidentally involved in all the major political events of the world. So he takes a boat to anywhere, and it turns out he goes to America.
Yeah.
And he's put into prison there because he's an alien and so on. And then they find out that he's very good on explosives. And he is sort of drawn into working for them on explosives. And he is serving the coffee, I think it is, to a group of people who are trying to work out how to split the atom. And he makes a suggestion that the two critical masses could be separated and then put together and detonated. And so he is the hero of the day, and he gets to meet President Truman and becomes a good friend of President Truman.
Because effectively he was responsible for the splitting the atom and the rise of the nuclear power, as it were.
Yes.
And then later he gets, I can't remember which comes in which sequence, but certainly I remember he was in Russia. Probably that was connected with the Americans. He got to know Stalin.
Yes. At that time, he was, before that, he was in a Russian prison for some time. And that's where he learned to speak Russian. And of course, when he was in the American prison, that was when he learned to speak English. And in Spain, with his Spanish friend, he learned to speak Spanish. He was really quite a bright bloke.
And all of these are told almost tongue-in-cheek, but it's very amusing. I found it very amusing. It's not the most profound book that either of us have ever read, but actually it's sort of reflecting the last century as well, isn't it?
Yes.
It covers all the key historical points. He goes to China, he goes to North Korea, and he meets, the North Korean dictators and Mao Zedong and Mao Zedong's wife, and gets involved with them, and he becomes the friend of everybody.
Yes, of course his two main assets are that he's an explosive expert, that he knows a lot of very important people, and he can speak various languages.
And meanwhile, his day job, as it were, the continuation of his actual life, he's now 100 and rising, he carries on with these strange gang that keep adding different people. The police are trying to find him, and the characters of the police are developed as well. And there's an elephant, it's just too many things coming in to describe them all. But the mood continues, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. And I think, some of the little bits of humour that I've picked out is, there was a motorcycle gang that was after him. And they fancied themselves not the brightest motorcycle gang in the world. And they thought that they would call themselves the Violence. But they weren't very good at spelling. And one of the gang's girlfriends made them jackets. And they asked her to embroider the Violence on the backs of their jackets. But she wasn't good at spelling. And she embroidered the Violins. So this fierce motorcycle gang were known as the Violins, which I thought was funny. And then one of them was in prison and he thought he'd start his own gang and he'd call himself Boss, and his two henchmen were Bucket and Bolt. Bolt was actually the young man with a suitcase full of 50 million crowns, which were really criminal.
They've been stolen from somewhere else.
Oh, they've been stolen from somewhere else, you see. So. And he actually died quite early on, quite accidentally. Bucket actually slipped in the elephant poo and the elephant sat on him. So he accidentally got killed as well. So it's that sort of throwaway humour all the way through. Alan met a really nice lady towards the end who was quite young for him because she was only 85 and she wasn't very bright. And Alan ended with some encouraging words about how he thought there wasn't a single person in the world who had gone so far with such a limited intelligence as Amanda had done. And Amanda thought that was so beautifully said that tears came to her eyes. It's a sort of throwaway humour like that all the way through.
And it's great fun to listen to, and it's really just a good, humorous listen.
It is,
isn't it?
It is.
Thank you very much, Val. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music.